white cow head on it. The gate was open and welcome. The Walker homestead, their nearest neighbors. Dad drove slowly forward. The driveway, two ribbons of flattened grass that undulated up and down on lichen-covered ground, unfurled in a lazy S through stands of skinny, black-trunked spruce trees. Occasionally, there was a break in the trees to her left, and Lenny saw a splash of distant blue, but it wasn't until they came to the clearing that Lenny saw the view. "Wow," Mama said. They emerged onto a flat ridge situated above a calm, blue cove. The huge piece of land had been cleared of all but a few carefully chosen trees and planted in hay. A large two-story log house sat like a crown at the highest point of land. Its triangular front boasted huge trapezoid windows and a pointed wraparound deck. It looked like the prow of some great ship, flung to shore by an angry sea and stuck on land, forever gazing out at the sea upon which it belonged. Mismatched chairs decorated the deck, each one turned toward the spectacular view. On the far side of the house were several animal pens full of cows and goats and chickens and ducks. Coils of barbed wire, wooden crates and pallets, a broken-down tractor, and the rusted shovel from an excavator, and the husks of several dead and dying trucks, lay scattered in the knee-high grass. Beehives stood clustered together not far from a small wooden structure that puffed smoke. In a break in the trees was the sharp, peaked roof of an outhouse. Down at the water, a gray dock jutted out into the blue sea. At its end, a weathered arch read, Walker Cove. A floatplane was tied up to the dock, in addition to two bright silver fishing boats.
"A floatplane," Dad muttered. "Must be rich."
They parked the bus and walked past a bright yellow tractor with a black bucket and a shiny red all-terrain vehicle. From the crested rise, Lenny saw people gathered down on the beach, at least a dozen of them, around a huge bonfire. Flames shot into the light lavender sky, making a sound like fingers snapping. Lenny followed her parents down the stairs to the beach. From here, she could see everyone at the party. A broad-shouldered man with long blonde hair was sitting on a fallen log playing a guitar. Large Marge had turned two white plastic buckets into bongo drums, and Lenny's teacher, Ms. Rhodes, was going crazy on a fiddle. Natalie was wicked with a harmonica, and Thelma was singing King of the Road. On Means by No Means, everyone joined in. Clyde and Ted were handling the barbecue, which looked to have been made out of old oil drums. Mad Earl stood nearby, drinking from a crockery jug. The two younger girls from school, Martha and Agnes, were down at the waterline, bent over, collecting shells with Moppet. Mama stepped down onto the beach, carrying her Tupperware full of cornbread. Dad was right behind her with a fifth of whiskey. The big, broad-shouldered man playing the guitar put down his instrument and got to his feet. He was dressed like most of the men here, in a flannel shirt and faded jeans and rubber boots, but even so, he stood out. He looked as if he'd been built for this rugged land, as if he could run all day, hack down an old-growth tree with a hatchet, and skip nimbly along a fallen log over a raging river. Even Lenny thought he was handsome, for an old guy.
"I'm Tom Walker," he said. "Welcome to my place. Ernst Albright."
Tom shook Dad's hand.
"This is my wife, Cora."
Mama smiled at Tom, shook his hand, then looked back.
"This is our daughter, Lenny. She's 13.
Tom smiled at Lenny.
"Hey, Lenny. My son, Matthew, mentioned you."
"He did," Lenny said. "Don't smile so big. What a dork."
Geneva Walker slipped in beside her husband.
"Hey," she said, smiling at Cora. "I see you've met my husband."
"X."
Tom Walker put his arm around Geneva, pulled her close.
"I love the woman like air, but I can't live with her."
"Can't live without me, either."
Geneva smiled, cocked her head to the left.
"That's my main squeeze over there, Calhoun Malvey. He doesn't love me as much as Tom does, but he likes me a hell of a lot better. And he doesn't snore."
She elbowed Mr. Walker in the side playfully.
"I hear you guys aren't too well prepared," Mr. Walker said to Dad. You're going to have to learn fast. Don't be afraid to ask for help. I'm always up for it. Anything you need to borrow, I have.
Lenny heard something in Dad's thanks that put her on alert. He sounded irritated all of a sudden, offended. Mama heard it too. She glanced worriedly at him. Mad Earl stumbled forward. He was wearing a t-shirt that read, "I've been fishing so long, I'm a master baiter." He grinned drunkenly, swayed side to side, stumbled.
"You offer inert help, Big Tom? That's mighty white of you. Sort of like King John offering to help his poor serfs. Maybe your friend the governor can help you out."
"Good Lord, Earl, not again," Geneva said. "Let's play some music. Ernt, can you play an instrument?"
"Guitar," Dad said. "But I sold..."
"Great," Geneva said, taking him by the arm, pulling him away from Mad Earl and toward Large Marge and the makeshift band gathered at the beach. She handed Dad the guitar Mr. Walker had put down. Mad Earl stumbled over to the fire and retrieved his crockery jug. Lenny wondered if Mama knew how beautiful she looked, standing there in her form-fitting pants, with her blonde hair blowing in the sea breeze. Her beauty was as clear as a perfectly sung note and as out of place up here as an orchid. Yeah, she knew exactly how beautiful she was, and Mr. Walker saw it too.
"Can I get you something to drink?"
he asked Mama.
"Is a beer okay?"
"Why, sure, Tom. I'd love a beer," Mama said, letting Mr. Walker lead her toward the food table and the cooler full of Rainier beer. Mama drifted along beside Mr. Walker. Her hips took up the beat of the music, swaying. She touched his forearm, and Mr. Walker looked down at her and smiled.
"Lenny!"
She heard her name being called and turned. Matthew stood on the point above, not far from the stairs, waving at her to come up. She climbed the stairs and found him, holding a beer in each hand.
"You ever had a beer before?"
he asked. She shook her head.
"Me either.
Come on." He took off into the thicket of trees to his left. They followed a twisting trail that led downward, past rock outcroppings. He led her to a small clearing, its floor padded by lichen. Through an opening in the black spruce trees, they could see the party. The beach was only 15 feet away, but might have been a different universe. Out there, the adults were laughing and talking and making music. Little kids were pawing through pebbles for unbroken shells. Axel was off by himself, stabbing his knife into a decaying log. Matthew sat down, stretching his legs out, leaning back against a log. Lenny sat down beside him, close but not so close that she was touching him. He snapped open a beer, hiss, and handed it to her. Wrinkling her nose, she took a sip. It fizzled in her throat and tasted bad.
"Gross," Matthew said, and she laughed.
Another 3 sips, and she leaned back into the log. A cool breeze came up off the beach, bringing with it the smell of brine and the pungent aroma of roasting meat. The whir and movement of the party was just beyond the trees. They sat in a companionable silence, which amazed Lenny. Usually, she was a nervous wreck around kids she wanted to befriend. Out on the beach, the party was in full swing now. Through a break in the trees, they could see it all. A mason jar was being passed from person to person. Her mother danced in a hip-swaying, hair-tossing way. She was like a woodland fairy, lit from within, dancing for the burly, sodden tree folk. The beer made Lenny feel woozy and lightheaded, as if she were full of bubbles.
"What made you guys move up here?"
Matthew asked. Before she could answer, he smashed his empty beer can into a rock, crumpling it. Lenny couldn't help laughing. Only a boy would do that.
"My dad's kind of an adventurer,"
she settled on as her answer. Never tell the truth. Never that Dad had trouble keeping a job and staying in one place, and never that he drank too much and liked to yell.
"He got tired of Seattle, I guess. What about you guys? When did you move here?"
"My grandpa, Eckhart Walker, came to Alaska during the Great Depression. He said he didn't want to stand in line for watery soup, so he packed up his stuff and hitchhiked to Seattle. He worked his way north from there.
Supposedly, he walked Alaska from shore to shore and even climbed Mount Alyeska with a ladder strapped to his back so he could cross glacial crevasses. He met my grandma Lily in Nome. She ran a laundry and diner. They got married and decided to homestead.
So your grandparents and your dad and you all grew up in that house?
Well, the big house was built a lot later, but we all grew up on this land. My mom's family lives in Fairbanks. My sister is living with them while she goes to college. And my folks split up a few years back, so Mom built herself a new house on the homestead and moved into it with her boyfriend Cal, who is a real douchebag. He grinned. But we all work together. He and Dad play chess in the winter. It's weird, but it's Alaska.
Wow, I can't even imagine living in one place my whole life.
She heard the edge of longing in her voice and was embarrassed by it. She tilted her beer up, swallowed the last foamy drips. The makeshift band was going all out now, hands banging on buckets, the guitar strumming, fiddles playing. Thelma and Mama and Ms. Rhodes were swishing their hips in time to the music, singing loudly. Rocky, mountain high, Colorado. Over at the grill, Clyde yelled out,
"Moose burgers are ready. Who wants cheese?"
"Come on," Matthew said. "I'm starving." He took her hand, it seemed natural, and led her through the trees and down onto the beach. They came up behind Dad and Mad Earl, who were off by themselves, drinking, and Lenny heard Mad Earl clink his mason jar against Dad's, hitting it so hard it made a sturdy clank.
"That Tom Walker sure thinks his shit don't stink,"
Dad said.
"When TSHTF, he'll come crawling to me 'cause I'm prepared."
Mad Earl slurred. Lenny froze, mortified. She looked at Matthew. He'd heard it too.
"Born rich,"
Dad added, his words slurred and slow in coming.
"That's what you said, right?"
Mad Earl nodded, stumbled into Dad. They held each other up.
"He thinks he's better than us."
Lenny pulled away from Matthew. Shame made her feel small, alone.
"Lenny,
I'm sorry you heard that," she said. And as if her dad's slurred bad-mouthing weren't bad enough, there was Mama over there, standing too close to Mr. Walker, smiling up at him in a way that could start trouble. Just like all the other times, and Alaska was supposed to be different.
"What's the matter?" Matthew asked.
Lenny shook her head, feeling a familiar sadness creep in. She could never tell him how it felt to live with a dad who scared you sometimes, and a mother who loved him too much and made him prove how much he loved her in dangerous ways, like flirting. These were Lenny's secrets, her burdens. She couldn't share them. All this time, all these years, she dreamed of having a real friend, one who would tell her everything. How had she missed the obvious? Lenny couldn't have a real friend, because she couldn't be one.
"Sorry," she mumbled. "It's nothing. Come on, let's eat. I'm starving."
6. After the party, back at the cabin, Lenny's parents were all over each other, making out like teenagers, banging into walls, pressing their bodies together. The combination of alcohol and music, and maybe Tom Walker's attention, had made them crazy for each other. Lenny hurried up into the loft, where she covered her ears with her pillow and hummed, "Come on, get happy." When the cabin fell silent again, she crawled over to the stack of books she'd bought at the Salvation Army. A book of poetry by someone named Robert Service grabbed her attention. She took it back into bed with her and opened it to a poem called "The Cremation of Sam McGee." She didn't need to light her lantern because it was still freaking light outside, even this late. "There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold." Lenny found herself falling into the poem's harsh, beautiful world. It captivated her so much that she kept reading, next about dangerous Dan McGrew and the lady known as Lou, and then the law of the Yukon. "This is the law of the Yukon, and ever she makes it plain, send not your foolish and feeble,
Send me your strong and your sane. Every line revealed a different side of this strange state they'd come to, but even so, she could never quite get Matthew out of her mind. She kept remembering the embarrassment she'd felt at the party when he overheard her father's ugly words. Would he still want to be her friend? The question consumed her, made her so tense she couldn't fall asleep. She would have sworn she didn't sleep at all, except that the next morning she woke to hear,
"Come on, sleepyhead. I need your help while Mama cooks us up some grub. You've got time before school starts."
Grub? Had they suddenly become cowboys? Lenny pulled on her jeans and a big sweater and went downstairs for her shoes. Outside, she found her dad up on that doghouse-looking thing on stilts, the cache. A skinned log ladder like the one leading up to the loft was propped up against the frame. Her dad stood near the top, hammering planks in place on the roof.
"Hand me those penny nails, Red," he said. "A handful."
She grabbed the blue coffee can full of nails and climbed up the ladder behind him. She fished out a single nail and handed it to him.
"Your hand is shaking."
He stared down at the nail in his hand. It bounced in his trembling fist. His face was as pale as a sheet of parchment, and his dark eyes looked bruised. The bags were so dark beneath them.
"I drank too much last night. Had trouble sleeping."
Lenny felt a jab of worry. Lack of sleep wasn't good for Dad. It made him anxious. So far, he'd been sleeping great in Alaska.
"Drinking does all kinds of bad shit to you, Red. I know better, too." "Well, that's it,"
he said, pounding the last nail into the suede work glove that had been used to make the door's hinge. Large Marge's idea. These Alaskans knew how to make do with anything. Lenny climbed down and dropped to the ground, the coffee can full of nails rattling at the movement. Dad rammed his hammer into his belt and started climbing down. He dropped down beside Lenny and tousled her hair.
"I guess you're my little carpenter."
"I thought I was your librarian, or your bookworm."
"Your mama says you can be anything. Some shit about a fish and a bicycle."
Yeah, Lenny had heard that. Maybe Gloria Steinem had said it. Who knew? Mama spouted sayings all the time. It made as much sense to Lenny as burning a perfectly good bra to make a point. Then again, it made no sense at all that in 1974, a grown woman with a job couldn't get a credit card in her name. It's a man's world, baby girl. She followed her dad from the cache to the deck, passing the bones of their new greenhouse and the garbage bag-wrapped makeshift smokehouse. On the other side of the house, their new chickens pecked at the ground in their new enclosure. A rooster preened on the ramp that led to the coop's entrance. At the water barrel, Dad ladled out a scoopful and splashed his face, which sent brown rivulets running down his cheeks. Then he went to the deck and sat on the bottom step. He looked bad, like he'd been drunk for days and was sick from it, like he used to look when he had nightmares and lost his temper.
"Your mama seemed to like Tom Walker."
Lenny tensed.
"Did you see the way he shoved our noses in his money? I can loan you my tractor, Ernst. Or do you need a ride to town?" He looked down at me, Red.
"He said to me he thought you were a hero and it was a dang shame what happened to you boys over there."
Lenny lied.
"He did?"
Dad pushed the hair out of his face. A frown creased his sunburned forehead.
"I like this place, Dad," Lenny said, realizing suddenly the truth of her words. She already felt more at home in Alaska than she ever had in Seattle.
"We're happy here. I see how happy you are. Maybe drinking isn't so good for you."
There was a tense moment of silence. By tacit agreement, Lenny and Mama didn't mention his drinking or his temper.
"You're probably right about that, Red."
He turned thoughtful.
"Come on, let's get you to school."
An hour later, Lenny stared up at the one-room schoolhouse. Slinging her backpack strap over one shoulder, she made her way to the front door, her lunchbox clanging into her right thigh. Lollygagging, Mama would have called it. All Lenny knew was that she was in no hurry to get to class. She was almost to the front door when it banged open and students came out in a laughing, talking clot. Matthew's mom, Geneva, was in the middle.
her work-chapped hands raised, telling everyone to calm down.
"Oh, Lenny, great," Mrs. Walker said. "You're so late, I thought you were going to be absent. Tika couldn't make it into school today, so I'm teaching. Ha, I barely graduated, let's face it." She laughed at herself. "And since I was more interested in boys than lessons in school, we're going on a field trip. I hate being inside on such a beautiful day."
Lenny fell into step beside Mrs. Walker, who put an arm around her and drew her close.
"I'm so glad you moved here."
"Me too."
"Before you, Matthew had a religious aversion to deodorant. Now he wears clean clothes. It's a dream come true for those of us who live with him."
Lenny had no idea what to say to that. They marched down to the harbor in a herd, like the elephants in the Jungle Book movie. Lenny felt Matthew's gaze on her. Twice she caught him staring at her with a confused expression on his face. When they reached the guest dock in the harbor, with fishing boats creaking and bobbing all around them, Mrs. Walker paired the students up and assigned them to the canoes.
"Matthew, Lenny, the green one is yours. Put on your life vests. Matthew, make sure Lenny is safe."
Lenny did as she was told and climbed down into the back end of the canoe, facing the bow. Matthew stepped down after her. The canoe rattled and creaked as he dropped into it. He sat down facing her. Lenny didn't know much about canoeing, but she knew that was wrong.
"You're supposed to face the other way." "Matthew Denali Walker, what in the hell are you doing?"
his mother said, gliding past him, with Moppet in her canoe.
"Have you had a seizure or something? What's my name?"
"I wanted to talk to Lenny for a sec, Mom. We'll catch up."
Mrs. Walker gave her son a knowing look.
"Don't be long. It's school, not your first date."
Matthew groaned.
"Oh my God, you are so weird."
"I love you too,"
Mrs. Walker said. Laughing, she paddled away.
"Come on, kids," she yelled to the other canoes. "Head for Eaglet Cove."
"You're staring at me," Lenny said to Matthew when they were alone.
Matthew laid his paddle across his lap. Waves slapped at their canoe, made a hollow, thunking sound as they drifted away from the dock. She knew he was waiting for her to say something. There was only one thing to say. Wind combed through her hair, pulled corkscrew curls free of the elastic band that bound them. Red strands fluttered across her face.
"I'm sorry about last night."
"Sorry for what?"
"Come on, Matthew. You don't have to be so nice."
"I have no idea what you're talking about."
"My dad was drunk," she said cautiously.
The admission was more than she'd ever said aloud before, and it felt disloyal, maybe even dangerous. She'd seen some ABC after-school specials. She knew that kids sometimes got taken away from unstable parents. The man could break up any family for anything. She would never want to make waves or get her dad in trouble. Matthew laughed.
"They all were. Big whoop. Last year, Mad Earl was so drunk he peed in the smokehouse."
"My dad gets drunk sometimes. And mad. He says stuff he doesn't mean. I know you heard what he said about your dad."
"I hear that all the time. Especially from Mad Earl. Crazy Pete isn't too fond of dad either, and Billy Horchow tried to kill him once. No one ever found out why. Alaska's like that. Long winters and too much drinking can make a man do weird things. I didn't take it personally. My dad wouldn't either."
"Wait, you mean you don't care?"
"This is Alaska. We live and let live. I don't care if your dad hates my dad. You're the one who matters, Lenny."
"I matter?"
"To me, you do."
Lenny felt light enough to float right out of this canoe. She had told him one of her darkest, most terrible secrets, and he liked her anyway.
"You're crazy."
"You bet your ass I am."
"Matthew Walker, quit yapping and start paddling,"
Mrs. Walker yelled at them.
"So we're friends, right?" Matthew said. "No matter what?"
Lenny nodded.
"No matter what."
"Groovy."
Matthew turned around and faced the bow and started paddling.
"I've got a cool thing to show you when we get where we are going," he said over his shoulder.
"What?"
"The bogs will be full of frogs' eggs. They're completely slimy and gross. Maybe I can get Axel to eat some. That kid is pure crazy."
Lenny picked up her paddle. She was glad he couldn't see how big her smile was. When Lenny stepped out of the schoolhouse, laughing at something Matthew had said, she saw her parents waiting for her in the VW bus, both of them. Mama leaned out the window and waved like she was trying out for a spot on The Price is Right.
Geez, you really get the royal treatment.
Lenny laughed and parted ways with him and climbed into the back of the bus.
So, my little bookworm,
Dad said as they rattled along on the dirt road out of town.
What useful thing did you learn today?
Well, we went on a field trip to Eaglet Cove and collected leaves for a biology project. Did you know that baneberries will make you have a heart attack if you eat them? And arrowgrass will cause respiratory failure?
Great, Mama said. Now the plants can kill us too. Dad laughed.
That's great, Lenny. Finally, a teacher who is teaching what matters.
I also learned about the Klondike Gold Rush. The RCMP wouldn't let anyone cross the Chilkoot Trail unless they carried a stove with them. Carried, on their backs. But most of the miners who came up paid Indians to carry their supplies.
Dad nodded.
The rich, riding the backs of better men. It's the history of civilization itself. It's what's destroying America. Men who take, take, take.
Lenny had noticed her dad saying more and more things like this since meeting Mad Earl. Dad turned into their driveway and rumbled bumpily along. When they reached the homestead, he parked hard and said,
Okay, Albrights, today my girls learn how to shoot.
He jumped out of the bus and dragged a bale of blackened, mildewed hay out from behind the chicken coop. Mama lit up a cigarette. The smoke formed a gray corona above her blonde hair.
This should be fun, she said without joy. We have to learn how. Large Marge and Thelma both said so, Lenny said.
Mama nodded. Lenny moved to the driver's seat.
Mama, you noticed that Dad is sort of prickly about Mr. Walker, right?
Mama turned. Their eyes met.
Is he? She said coolly. You know he is. So, I mean, you know how he can get if you, you know, flirt.
Dad thumped on the front of the bus so hard Mama flinched and made a little sound, like a bitten-off scream. She dropped her cigarette and scrambled down to find it. Lenny knew her Mama wouldn't respond anyway. That was another facet of their family weirdness. Dad blew his temper, and Mama somehow encouraged it, like maybe she needed to know how much he loved her all the time. Dad herded Lenny and Mama out of the bus and over the bumpy terrain to where he'd set up a bale of hay with a target on it. He lifted his rifle from its leather scabbard, aimed, and shot, hitting the target dead center in the head he'd drawn on a piece of paper with a magic marker. A bunch of birds flew up from the trees, scattered through the blue sky, cawing angrily at Dad for disturbing them. A giant bald eagle, with a wingspan of at least 6 feet, glided in to take their place. It perched on an uppermost branch of a tree, pointed its yellow beak down at them.
That's what I expect of you two,
Dad said. Mama exhaled smoke.
We're going to be here a while, baby girl.
Dad handed Lenny the rifle.
Okay, Red, let's see what you've got naturally. Look through the scope, don't get too close, and when you have the target in your sight, squeeze the trigger. Slow and steady. Breathe evenly. Okay, aim. I'll tell you when to shoot. Watch out for-
She lifted the rifle, aimed, thought, Wow, Matthew, I can't wait to tell you, and accidentally pulled the trigger. The rifle hit her shoulder hard enough to knock her off her feet, and the sight slammed into her eye with a crack that sounded like breaking bone. Lenny screamed in pain, dropped the rifle, and collapsed to her knees in the mud, clamping a hand over her throbbing eye. It hurt so badly she felt sick to her stomach, almost puked. She was still screaming and crying when she felt someone drop in place beside her, felt a hand rubbing her back.
Shit, Red,
Dad said.
I didn't tell you to shoot. You're okay, just breathe. It's a normal rookie mistake. You'll be fine.
Is she okay?
Mama screamed.
Is she?
Dad pulled Lenny to her feet.
No crying, Lenny, he said. This isn't some beauty pageant training where you learn to sing for a college scholarship. You have to listen to me. This is your life I'm trying to save.
But... It hurt so badly. A headache burst into pounding life behind her eyes. She couldn't see well out of her injured eye. Half the world was blurry. It hurt even more that he didn't care about how much it hurt. She couldn't help feeling sorry for herself. She would bet Tom Walker never treated Matthew this way.
Stop it, Lenora,
Dad said, giving her shoulder a little shake.
You said you liked Alaska and wanted to belong here.
Ernt, please, she's not a soldier, Mama said. Dad spun Lenny around, gripped her shoulders, shook her hard.
How many girls were abducted in Seattle before we left?
Lots. One every month. Sometimes more.
Who were they?
Just girls. Teenagers, mostly.
And Patty Hearst was taken from her apartment with her boyfriend right there, right?
Lenny wiped her eyes, nodded.
You want to be a victim or a survivor, Lenora?
Lenny had such a headache she couldn't think.
Survivor?
We have to be ready for anything up here. I want you able to protect yourself.
His voice broke on that. She saw the emotion he was trying so hard to hide. He loved her. That was why he wanted her to be able to take care of herself.
What if I'm not here when something happens? When a bear breaks down the door or a pack of wolves surrounds you? I need to know you can protect your mom and save yourself.
Lenny sniffled hard, struggled for control. He was right. She needed to be strong.
I know.
Okay. Pick up the rifle,
Dad said.
Try again.
Lenny picked up the mud-splattered rifle. Aimed.
Don't hold the sight so close to your eye. The recoil is a mother on this. There. Hold it like that.
Dad gently repositioned the weapon.
Put your finger on the trigger. Lightly.
She couldn't do it. She was too scared of getting cracked in the eye again.
Do it,
Dad said. She took a deep breath and slid her forefinger along the trigger, feeling the cold steel curve. She ducked her chin, drew back farther from the sight. She forced herself to concentrate. The sounds faded away, the cawing of the crows and the wind clattering through the trees diminished until all she heard was the beating of her own heart. She closed her left eye, tried to calm down. The world spiraled down to a single circle, blurry at first, a double image. Focus. She saw the bale of hay, the white paper attached to it, the outline of a man's head and shoulders. She was amazed by the clarity of the image. She adjusted the position of the rifle, took aim at the very center of the head. Slowly, she squeezed the trigger. The rifle cracked in recoil, hit her hard in the shoulder again, so hard she stumbled, but the sight didn't hit her eye. The bullet hit the bale of hay. Not the target, not even the white paper around the target, but the bale. She felt a surprising pride in that small achievement.
I knew you could do it, Red. By the time we're done, you'll be sniper good.
7. Ms. Rhodes was at the chalkboard writing assignment pages when Lenny got to school.
Ah, the teacher said. It looks like someone put the scope too close to her eye. Do you need an aspirin?
Rookie mistake, Lenny said, almost proud of her injury. It meant she was becoming an Alaskan.
I'm fine.
Ms. Rhodes nodded.
Take your seat and open your history book.
Lenny and Matthew stared at each other as she entered the classroom. His smile was so big she saw his mouthful of crooked teeth. She sidled into her desk, which clanked against his.
Almost everyone gets popped in the eye the first time. I had a black eye for like a week. Did it hurt?
It did, but learning to shoot was so cool I didn't...
Moose!
Axel yelled, popping up from his seat and running to the window. Lenny and Matthew followed him. All of the kids crowded together at the window, watching a giant bull moose amble through the playground behind the schoolhouse. He knocked over the picnic table and began eating the bushes. Matthew leaned close to Lenny. His shoulder brushed hers.
I say we make excuses and book it out of school today. I'll say I'm needed at home after lunch.
Lenny felt a little thrill at the idea of skipping school. She'd never done it before.
I could say I have a headache,
I just have to be back here at 3 for pickup.
Cool, Matthew said.
Okay, okay, Ms. Rhodes said. Enough of that. Lenny, Axel, Matthew, turn to page 117 in your Alaska State History book.
For the rest of the morning, Lenny and Matthew watched the clock nervously. Just before lunchtime, Lenny pleaded a headache and said she needed to go home.
I can walk to the general store and call my parents on the ham radio.
Sure, Ms. Rhodes said. The teacher didn't seem to question the lie, and Lenny scooted out of the classroom and closed the door behind her. She walked down to the road and ducked into the trees, waiting. A half hour later, Matthew strode out of the school, grinning widely.
So what are we gonna do? Lenny asked.
What choices were there? There was no TV, no movie theater, no paved roads for bike riding, no drive-ins for milkshakes, no roller rinks or playgrounds. He took her by the hand and led her to a muddy, all-terrain vehicle.
Climb on, Matthew said, swinging his leg over the ATV and settling on the black seat.
Lenny did not think this was a good idea, but she didn't want him to think she was a scaredy cat, so she climbed aboard. Awkwardly, she put her arms around his waist. He twisted the throttle, and they were off in a cloud of dust, the engine making a high-pitched whine, rocks flying out from beneath the wide rubber tires. Matthew drove through town, rumbled over the bridge and onto the dirt road. Just past the airstrip, he veered into the trees, thumped over a ditch, and hurtled up a trail she didn't even see until they were on it. They drove uphill, into thick trees, onto a plateau. From there, Lenny saw a crook of blue, seawater carving into the land, waves crashing onto the shore. Matthew slowed the vehicle and expertly guided it over rough terrain, where there was no trail beneath their tires. Lenny was thrown about. She had to hold tightly to him. Finally, he eased to a stop and clicked off the motor. Silence enveloped them instantly, broken only by the waves crashing on the black granite rocks below. Matthew dug through the bag on his three-wheeler and pulled out a pair of binoculars. Come on. He walked ahead of her, his feet steady on the rough, rocky terrain. Twice, Lenny almost fell as rock gave way beneath her feet, but Matthew was like a mountain goat, perfectly at home. He led her to a clearing, perched like a scooped hand above the sea. There were two handmade wooden chairs positioned to face the trees. Matthew plopped down in one and indicated the other for her. Lenny dropped her backpack onto the grass and sat down, waiting as Matthew peered through the binoculars that had been stored on the vehicle and scanned the trees. There they are. He handed her the binoculars, pointed to a stand of trees. That's Lucy and Ricky. My mom named them. Lenny peered through the binoculars. At first, all she saw was trees, trees, and more trees as she panned slowly from left to right, and then a flash of white. She eased back to the left a few degrees. A pair of bald eagles perched on a bathtub-sized nest built high in the trees. One of the birds was feeding a trio of eaglets who jostled and lurched, beaks up, to get the regurgitated food. Lenny could hear their squabbling, squawking cries over the crash of water below.
Wow, Lenny said.
She would have pulled her Polaroid out of her backpack. She never went anywhere without it, but the eagles were too far away for the clunky camera to capture.
They've been coming back here to lay eggs for as long as I can remember. Mom first brought me here when I was little. You should see them making the nest. It's amazing. And they mate for life. I wonder what Ricky would do if something happened to Lucy. My mom says that nest weighs almost a ton. I've watched eaglets leave that nest my whole life.
Wow,
Lenny said again, smiling as one of the eaglets flapped its wings and tried to climb up over its siblings.
We haven't come out here in a long time, though.
Lenny heard something in Matthew's voice. She lowered the binoculars and looked at him.
You and your mom?
He nodded.
Since she and Dad split up, it's been hard. Maybe it's because my sister, Alieska, moved to Fairbanks to go to college. I miss her.
You guys must be close.
Yeah, she's cool. You'd like her. She thinks she wants to live in a city, but no way it will last. She'll be back. Dad says we both have to go to college, so we know all our options. He's kind of pushy about it, actually. I don't need college to tell me what I want to be.
You already know?
Sure. I want to be a pilot, like my uncle went. I love being up in the sky. But my dad says it's not enough. I guess I need to know about physics and shit.
Lenny understood. They were kids, she and Matthew. No one asked their opinion or told them anything. They just had to muddle along and live in the world presented to them, confused a lot of the time because nothing made sense, but certain of their subterranean place on the food chain. She sat back in the splintery chair. He had told her something personal about himself, something that mattered. She needed to do the same thing. Wasn't that how true friendships worked? She swallowed hard, said quietly,
"You're lucky your dad wants the best for you. My dad has been weird since the war."
"Weird how?"
Lenny shrugged. She didn't know exactly what to say or how to say it without revealing too much.
"He has nightmares, and bad weather can set him off, sometimes. But he hasn't had a nightmare since we moved here, so maybe he's better."
"I don't know. Winter is one big night up here. People go batshit in the dark, run screaming, open fire on their pets and friends."
Lenny felt a tightening in her stomach. She had never really thought about the fact that in winter it would be as dark as it was light now. She didn't want to think about that. Winter dark.
"What do you worry about?" she asked.
"I worry that my mom will leave us. I mean, I know she built a house and stayed on the homestead, and that my folks still love each other in some weird way, but it's not the same anymore. She just came home one day and said she didn't love Dad anymore. She loves Cal the creep."
He turned in his chair, looked at Lenny.
"It's scary that people can just stop loving you, you know?"
"Yeah."
"I wish school lasted longer," he said.
"I know. We have 3 more days before summer break, and then..."
Once school ended, Lenny would be expected to work full-time at the homestead, and so would Matthew at his place. They'd hardly see each other. On the last day of school, Lenny and Matthew made all kinds of promises about how they would keep in touch until classes started again in September, but the truth shouldered in between them. They were kids, and not in control of anything, their own schedules least of all. Lenny felt lonely already as she walked away from Matthew on that last day and headed for the VW bus waiting on the side of the road.
"You look down in the dumps, baby girl," Mama said from her place in the driver's seat.
Lenny climbed into the passenger seat. She didn't see the point in whining about something that couldn't be changed. It was 3 o'clock. There was an ocean of daylight left. That meant hours of chores to do. As soon as they were home, Mama said,
"I have an idea. Go get us that striped wool blanket and the chocolate bar in the cooler. I'll meet you down on the beach."
"What are we going to do?"
"Absolutely nothing."
"What? Dad will never agree to that."
"Well, he's not here."
Mama smiled. Lenny didn't waste a second. She ran to the house before Mama changed her mind. She grabbed the slim Hershey's chocolate bar from the cooler in the kitchen and the blanket from the back of the sofa. Wrapping it around her like a poncho, she headed for the rickety beach stairs, followed them down to the curl of water-stippled gray pebbles that was their own private beach. To the left were dark, enticing stone caves carved by centuries of hurling water. Mama stood in the tall grass up from the beach, a cigarette already lit. Lenny was pretty sure that, to her, childhood would always smell like sea air and cigarette smoke and her mother's rose-scented perfume. Lenny spread out the blanket on the uneven ground, and she and Mama sat down on it, their legs stretched out, their bodies angled into each other. In front of them, the blue sea rolled forward ceaselessly, washing over the stones, rustling them. Not far away, an otter floated on its back, using its small black paws to crack open a clam.
"Where's Dad?"
"He went fishing with Matt Earl. I think Dad's hoping to ask the old man for a loan. Money is getting pretty tight. I've still got some of the money from my mom, but I've been using it for cigarettes and Polaroid film."
She gave Lenny a soft smile.
"I'm not sure Matt Earl is good for Dad," Lenny said.
Mama's smile faded.
"I know what you mean."
He's happy here, though,
Lenny said. She tried not to think about the conversation she'd had with Matthew about how winter was coming and winter was dark and cold and crazy-making.
I wish you remembered your dad from before Nam.
Yeah.
Lenny had heard dozens of stories of that time. Mama loved to talk about before, about who they'd been in the beginning. The words were like a much-loved fairy tale. Mama had been 16 when she got pregnant.
16.
Lenny would be 14 in September. Amazingly, she'd never really thought about that before. She'd known her mama's age, of course, but she hadn't really put the facts together.
16. You were only 2 years older than me when you got pregnant,
Lenny said. Mama sighed.
I was a junior in high school. Christ, no wonder my parents threw a clot.
She gave Lenny a crooked, charming smile.
They were not the kind of people who could understand a girl like me. They hated my clothes and my music, and I hated their rules. At 16, I thought I knew everything, and I told them so. They sent me away to a Catholic girls' school, where rebellion meant rolling up the waistband of your skirt to shorten the hem and show an inch of skin above your knees. We were taught to kneel and pray and marry well. Your dad came into my life like a rogue wave, knocking me over. Everything he said upended my conventional world and changed who I was. I stopped knowing how to breathe without him. He told me I didn't need school. I believed everything he said. Your dad and I were too in love to be careful, and I got pregnant. My dad exploded when I told him. He wanted to send me away to one of those houses for unwed mothers. I knew they'd take you away from me. I've never hated anyone more than I hated him in that moment.
Mama sighed.
So we ran away. I was 16, almost 17, and your dad was 25. When you came along, we were flat broke and living in a trailer park. But none of that mattered. What was money or work or new clothes when you had the most perfect baby in the world?
Mama leaned back.
He used to carry you all the time, at first in his arms and then on his shoulders. You adored him. We shut out the world and lived on love, but the world came roaring back.
The war, Lenny said. Mama nodded.
I begged your dad not to go to Vietnam. We fought and fought about it. I didn't want to be a soldier's wife, but he wanted to go. So I packed my tears with his clothes and let him go. It was supposed to be for a year. I didn't know what to do, where to go, how to live without him. I ran out of money and moved back home with my parents, but I couldn't stand it there. All we did was fight. They kept telling me to divorce your father and think about you, and finally I left again. That's when I found the commune and people who didn't judge me for being a kid with a kid. Then your dad's helicopter got shot down, and he was captured. I got one letter from him in 6 years.
Lenny remembered the letter and how her mother had cried after reading it.
When he came home, he looked like a dead man,
Mama said.
But he loved us like air, said he couldn't sleep if I wasn't in his arms, although he didn't sleep much then either.
As always, Mama's story came to a stumbling halt at this point, the fairy tale over. The witch's door slammed shut on the wandering kids. The man who'd come home from war was not the man who'd boarded the plane for Vietnam.
He's better up here, though,
Mama said.
Don't you think? He's almost himself again.
Lenny stared down at the sea, rolling inexorably toward her. Nothing you did could hold back that rising tide. One mistake or miscalculation, and you could be stranded or washed away. All you could do was protect yourself by reading the charts and being prepared and making smart choices.
You know, it's dark up here for 6 months in the winter, and snowy and freezing cold and stormy.
I know.
You always said bad weather made him worse.
Lenny felt her mother pull away from her. This was a fact she didn't want to confront. They both knew why.
It won't be like that here, Mama said.
grinding out her cigarette in the rocks beside her. She said it again, just for good measure.
Not here. He's happier here. You'll see.
As the long summer days passed, Lenny's anxiety faded. Summer in Alaska was pure magic, the land of the midnight sun, rivers of light, 18-hour days with only a breath of dusk to separate one from the next, light and work. That was summer in Alaska. There was so much to get done. Everyone talked about it all the time, in line at the diner, during checkout at the general store, on the ferry to town. How's the fishing going? Hunting good? How's the garden? Every question was about stocking up on food, getting ready for winter. Winter was a big deal. Lenny had learned that. The coming cold was a constant subtext up here. Even if you were out fishing on a beautiful summer day, you were catching fish for winter. It might be fun, but it was serious business. Survival, it seemed, could hinge on the smallest thing. She and her parents woke at 5 a.m. and mumbled through breakfast and then set out to do their chores. They rebuilt the goat pen, chopped wood, tended the garden, made soap, caught and smoked salmon, tanned hides, canned fish and vegetables, darned socks, duct-taped everything together. They moved, hauled, nailed, built, scraped. Large Marge sold them 3 goats, and Lenny learned how to care for them. She also learned to pick berries and make jam and shuck clams and cure salmon eggs into the best bait in the world. In the evenings, Mama made them new foods, salmon or halibut and almost everything, and vegetables from the garden. Dad cleaned his guns and fixed the metal traps Mad Earl had sold to him and read manuals on butchering animals. Barter and trade and helping out your neighbor was the way they all lived. You never knew when someone was going to drive up your driveway and offer extra meat or some mildewed planks of wood or a bucket of blueberries in exchange for something. Parties sprouted like weeds in this wild place. People showed up with coolers full of salmon and a case of beer, and a call was made on the ham radio. A boat full of fishermen pulled up to shore. A float plane landed in their cove. The next thing you knew, people were gathered around at a fire on the beach somewhere, laughing and talking and drinking well past midnight. Lenny became an adult that summer. That was how it felt to her. In September, she turned 14, started her period, and finally needed a bra. Pimples popped out like tiny pink volcanoes on her cheeks, her nose, between her eyebrows. When it first happened, she worried about seeing Matthew, worried that he would change his opinion based on her awkward adolescence. But he didn't seem to notice that her skin had become an enemy. Seeing him remained the highlight of her days up here. Whenever they got the chance to be together that summer, they ran off from the group and holed up and talked. He recited Robert Service poems to her and showed her special things like a nest full of blue duck eggs or a huge bear print in the sand. She took pictures of the things he showed her, and of him, in every light and tacked them into a giant collage on her loft bedroom wall. Summer ended as quickly as it had begun. Autumn in Alaska was less a season and more an instant, a transition. Rain started to fall and didn't stop, turning the ground to mud, drowning the peninsula, falling in curtains of gray. Rivers rose to splash over their crumbling banks, tearing big chunks away, changing course. All at once, it seemed, the leaves of cottonwood trees around the cabin turned golden and whispered to themselves, then curled into black flutes and floated to the ground in crispy, lacy heaps. School started, and with it, Lenny felt her childhood return. She met Matthew in the classroom and took her seat beside him, scooting in close. His smile reawakened her in a way, reminded her that there was more to life than work. He taught her something new about friendship. It picked right back up where you'd left off, as if you hadn't been apart at all. On a cold Saturday night in late September, after a long workday, Lenny stood at the window, staring out at the dark yard. She and her mother were exhausted. They'd worked from sun up to sundown, canning the last of the season's salmon, preparing jars, scaling fish, slicing the plump pink and silver strips, and cutting off the slimy skin. They packed the strips in jars and put them into the pressure cooker. One by one, they carried the jars down to the root cellar and stacked them on newly built shelves.
If there are 10 smart guys in a room and one crackpot, you can bet who your dad will like best.
Huh? Lenny asked.
Never mind.
Mama moved in to stand by Lenny. Outside, night had fallen. A full moon cast blue-white light on everything. Stars filled the sky with pinpricks and elliptical smears of light. Up here, at night, the sky was impossibly huge and never quite turned black, but stayed a deep velvet blue. The world beneath it dwindled down to nothing, a dollop of firelight, a squiggly white reflection of moonlight on the tarnished waves. Dad was out there in the dark with Mad Earl. The two men stood beside each other at a fire burning in an oil drum, passing a jug back and forth. Black smoke billowed up from the garbage they were burning. Everyone else who had come by to help had gone home hours ago. Mad Earl suddenly pulled out his pistol and shot at the trees. Dad laughed uproariously at that.
How long are they going to stay out there? Lenny asked.
The last time she'd gone to the outhouse, she'd heard snippets of their conversation. Ruining the country, keep ourselves safe, coming anarchy, nuclear.
Who knows?
Mama sounded irritated. She'd fried the moose steaks Mad Earl had brought with him. Then she'd made roasted potatoes and set the card table with their camping plates and utensils. One of Lenny's paperback novels had been used to prop up the table's bad leg. That had been hours ago. Now the meat was probably as dry as an old boot.
Enough is enough,
Mama finally said. She went outside. Lenny sidled to the doorway, pushed the door open so she could hear. Goats bleated at the sound of footsteps.
Hey, Cora,
Mad Earl said, smiling sloppily. He stood unsteady on his feet, swayed to the right, stumbled.
Would you like to stay for dinner, Earl?
Mama asked.
No, but thanks,
Mad Earl said, stumbling sideways.
My daughter will tan my hide if I don't make it home. She's making salmon chowder.
Another time, then, Mama said, turning back to the cabin. Come on in, Ernt. Lenny's starving.
Mad Earl staggered to his truck, climbed in, and drove away, stopping and starting, honking the horn. Dad made his way across the yard in a mincing, overcautious way that meant he was drunk. Lenny had seen it before. He slammed the door behind him and stumbled to the table, half falling into his chair. Mama carried in a platter of meat and oven-browned potatoes and a warm loaf of sourdough bread, which Thelma had taught them how to make from the starter every homesteader kept on hand.
Looks great,
Dad said, shoveling a forkful of moose meat into his mouth, chewing noisily. He looked up, bleary-eyed.
You two have a lot of catching up to do. Earl and I were talking about it. When TSHTF, you two would be the first casualties.
TSHTF, what in God's name are you talking about?
Mama said. Lenny shot her mother a warning look. Mama knew better than to say anything about anything when he was drunk.
When the shit hits the fan. You know, martial law, a nuclear bomb. Or a pandemic.
He tore off a hunk of bread, dragged it in the meat juice. Mama sat back. She lit up a cigarette, eyeing him.
Don't do it, Mama, Lenny thought. Don't say anything. I don't like all of this end-of-the-world rhetoric, Ernt. And there's Lenny to consider. She...
Dad slammed his fist down on the table so hard everything rattled.
Damn it, Cora! Can't you ever just support me?
He got to his feet and went to the row of parkas hanging by the front door. He moved jerkily. She thought she heard him say, "Goddamn stupid," and mutter something else. He shook his head and flexed and unflexed his hands. Lenny saw a wildness in him, barely contained emotion rising hard and fast. Mama ran after him, reached out.
"Don't touch me,"
he snarled, shoving her away. Dad grabbed a parka and stepped into his boots and went outside, slamming the door shut behind him. Lenny caught her mother's gaze, held it. In those wide blue eyes that held on to every nuance of expression,
she saw her own anxiety reflected.
Does he believe all of that end-of-the-world stuff?
I think he does, Mama said. Or maybe he just wants to. Who knows? It doesn't matter, though. It's all talk.
Lenny knew what did matter. The weather was getting worse, and so was he.
What's it really like?
Lenny asked Matthew the next day at the end of school. All around them, kids were gathering up their supplies to go home.
What?
Winter.
Matthew thought about it.
Terrible and beautiful. It's how you know if you're cut out to be Alaskan. Most go running back to the outside before it's over.
The great alone, Lenny said. That was what Robert Service called Alaska.
You'll make it, Matthew said earnestly.
She nodded, wishing she could tell him that she'd begun to worry as much about the dangers inside of her home as outside of it. She could tell Matthew a lot of things, but not that. She could say her father drank too much, or that he yelled or lost his temper, but not that he sometimes scared her. The disloyalty of such a thing was impossible to contemplate. They exited the schoolhouse together, walking shoulder to shoulder. Outside, the VW bus waited for her. It looked bad these days, all dinged up and scraped. The bumper was duct-taped in place. The muffler had fallen off at a pothole, so now the poor old thing roared like a race car. Both of her parents were inside, waiting for her.
Bye,
Lenny said to Matthew, and headed to the vehicle. She tossed her backpack into the back of the bus and climbed in.
Hey, guys, Lenny said.
Dad jammed the bus in reverse, backed up, and turned around.
Matt Earl wants me to teach his family a few things,
Dad said, turning onto the main road.
We talked about it the other night.
In no time, they were out of town and up the hill and pulling into the compound. Dad was the first one out of the bus. He grabbed his rifle from the back and slung it over his shoulder. Mad Earl, seated on his porch, immediately rose and waved. He yelled something Lenny couldn't hear, and people stopped working. They put down their shovels and axes and chainsaws and moved into the clearing in the center of the compound. Mama opened the door and got out. Lenny followed close behind, her waffle stompers sinking into the wet, spongy ground. A dented Ford truck pulled up beside the VW and parked. Axel and the two girls, Agnes and Martha, got out of the truck and headed for the crowd gathering in front of Mad Earl's porch. Mad Earl stood on the eroding, slanted porch, his bandy legs spaced a little farther apart than looked comfortable. His white hair hung limply around his loose-skinned face, greasy at the roots and frizzing at the ends. He wore dirty jeans tucked into brown rubber boots and a flannel work shirt that had seen better days. He made a sweeping motion with his hands.
Get closer. Come on in. Ernt, come up by me, son.
There was a murmur of sound through the crowd. Heads turned. Dad strode past Thelma and Ted, smiling at Clyde and thumping his back when he reached him. Dad stepped up onto the porch beside Mad Earl. He looked tall and rangy next to the diminutive old man. Super handsome, with all that black hair and the bushy black mustache.
We was talking last night, us boys, about the shit going on outside,
Mad Earl said.
Our president is a certified crook, and a bomb blowed a TWA jet right out of the sky. Ain't nobody safe anymore.
Lenny turned, looked up at Mama, who shrugged.
My son Beau was the very best of us. He loved Alaska, and he loved the good old U.S. of A. enough to volunteer to fight in that damn war, and we lost him. But even from that hellhole, he was thinking of us, his family. Our safety and security mattered to him. So he sent us his friend, Ernt Albright, to be one of us.
Mad Earl thumped Dad on the back, kind of pushed him forward.
I've been watching Ernt all summer, and now I know. He wants the best for us.
Dad pulled a folded newspaper from his back pocket, held it up. The headline read, Bomb on TWA